T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
That's good. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Midday show with Andy and Randy. Final hour on a Thursday. Trillville Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Final hour for Willie P filling in this week as well. Excellent work, Will, as always. And a lot to get to this hour. We'll get to what's trending in just a minute. Get back into the Braves. Last night, a handful of lingering Braves questions. Nick Markakis is back. And other Braves news as well, and some audio from last night coming up in 20 minutes. And then we'll get to the AMA at 1:40, as we always do. Any question, any topic, Solomon Brothers Diamond text line, or on Twitter, at TBM929, at Willie P. Style, at Brian_Gebhardt, or at Wendy Radio. Hugh Douglas texted me, Will, at the end of the last segment. Because remember, Brian was asking us about the connection that Dansby and Ozzy seem to share. And we spend a lot of time talking about Ozzy and Ronald Acuna and their special relationship. Hugh says that Dansby and Ozzy share a thing called man love. That's what he texted me. He said it's called man love. And I couldn't agree more. I think that's exactly what it is. And it's beautiful. There's a lot of like physically expressive people on that team, which is kind of unusual for Major League Baseball. Like hugging and touching and, you know, just showing one another you like each other beyond just the normal, what's up, dude? Yeah, all right, buddy. Like that kind of stuff, which
you,
is cool.
Dare you call it a brotherhood?
Well, the last brotherhood kind of...
Sorry.
The last brotherhood kind of scuffling a little bit. I don't know what you call it. A man-loverhood or something like that. But
I like man-love. I'm a big fan of that.
So do I. I'm a man-love guy. I like to be expressive with my emotions. I'm not scared to do that. Anyway, thanks, Hugh. Thanks for listening, by the way.
I would love
to see you someday, Hugh. I hope everything is well. I saw the meatloaf that you made last night, and don't let people get you down, man. People were hating on Hugh's meatloaf. It looked fine to me.
His meatloaf looked good.
I've ever eaten. Yeah.
He said last night it was. It didn't taste as good as he thought it was going to. He was somewhat disappointed. He said it was just okay.
Well, that's not. I mean, that's a bummer. But again, like people were like, "Oh, it doesn't look good." Like what? That's what meatloaf looks like. It's a loaf of meat.
There's a recipe for meatloaf I have from Emeril, where basically you put a big fat chorizo sausage in the middle of it. Now that's
that sounds good. Yeah, I would try that. That sounds delightful. Anyway, thanks for listening, Hugh. Hi, how are you? Man love. Let's get to what's trending.
Ladies and gentlemen, time now for what's trending.
A look at the top trending headlines of the day.
Oh my God.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
That was up into the box for Mr. Hank Aaron and all the Big Terry and everyone was up there. So those were our fans of the game. So I just gave a little salute. Got to try and show off for Mr. Aaron, so that's what I tried to do.
Freddie Freeman talking about what he was doing after he crossed home plate last night after hitting a home run. He was pointing up to Hank Aaron, who was in the building last night to be a part of the broadcast. Andrew Young, also a part of the broadcast. And I know that they do this every year with Hank Aaron, and then he oftentimes finds his way onto an ESPN broadcast as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's one of those things. I would love it every game. Obviously,
right.
You can't do that. I wish they did it more, but also maybe less makes it more special. I'm really the bottom line is this: I love it when Hank Aaron is on the broadcast. It's such a joy to listen to him, not only talk about his time in Major League Baseball, but last night they were talking about John Lewis, whose funeral is happening in Atlanta today, has happened in Atlanta today, and the impact that he had on the city, the impact that Hank Aaron had on the city, the impact that the Braves coming here had on the city. And there's just such a, it's such a, such a rich history in this town, in a lot of different directions, but especially when it comes to civil rights and how sports helped in that pursuit, and how hopefully sports can continue to help in that pursuit. Hopefully that, that history continues to be rich. But I mean, Hank Aaron being a part of that and being willing to just kind of bless us with his stories as he did on TV last night was just awesome. I thought Chip Carey did a really nice job with the interview too.
I don't want to give away ideas for free, but I almost feel like if you could get someone to front a Conversations with a Home Run King type podcast, I think that would get rave reviews with Hank Aaron. It could be something where it's like he, not just him, but maybe he brings in other legendary figures, whether it's in sports or even Atlanta figures. Like, that would be something if he'd be amenable to it. I'd listen to it.
Yeah, like, here's a weird story and a true thing about me. A lot of times after the show, like, I'll just go on YouTube and try to find interviews, or sometimes you can find them in podcast form, but a lot of time they're from a long time ago. Interviews with baseball players from back in the day, especially guys that were involved in the integration process or weren't even allowed to play Major League Baseball because baseball wasn't integrated yet. One of my favorite guys to listen to is Buck O'Neill. Buck O'Neill, who was the chairman of the board of the Negro Leagues Museum in Kansas City for years and years, passed away about a decade ago.
Fantastic museum, by the way, if you've never been.
It is. It's amazing. But just listening to stories from guys, like the history that those guys have and that they know and the stories that they could tell and the life that they led. Hank Aaron's the same. I'm probably going to do that today. Probably just going to go down the Hank Aaron wormhole and listen to Hank Aaron for an hour and a half after the show today.
It was nice to see the Braves, though, on the field, at home, and looking more like their regular selves. I think that those first six games, and I think Brian touched on this earlier, too, it's just, you know, playing in that weird dome, playing in an uncomfortable environment, also up in New York, first time really seeing what the field would look like without fans in the stands. You kind of got more in your routine when you were at Truist Park. I know that people will quibble with the fact that Mike Soroka didn't pitch more than 5 1/3 inning and that Darren O'Day kind of blew up. But outside of those two things, you had three scoreless innings from the bullpen after that. You had Freddie have four hits. Acuna was on base three times. Dansby a couple more hits as well. Great defensive play to end the game from Austin Riley. I mean, there were a lot of positives in a real week and a half bunk that didn't really have a lot that we could take from it other than that blowout win on Sunday and the come from behind win last Saturday.
Yeah, we'll let you hear more highlights from the game and more post-game audio coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll get back into the Braves. Look, they're back at it tonight. I'm not over that yet, by the way. I don't know if anyone else has gotten used to it and it's no longer fun. But the fact that baseball happens every day now after the 4 months where we had nothing has yet to wear off. Like, sitting there last night being like, oh, God, it's just a Wednesday night and watching a game that matters, like normal almost. I mean, not normal, but kind of like almost normal. Really special. They play again tonight. All right. Other trending topics this morning, other breaking news today, is that Georgia Tech is going to play Notre Dame at Bobby Dodd. That game is going to be at Bobby Dodd as the ACC announced their upcoming football schedule last night. 10 conference games, 11 games in total. They've left one spot open for a non-conference game that has to be played against an in-state opponent, which in Georgia Tech's case could be Georgia. It means we might not have to miss out on that rivalry game this year. Now we all look at the SEC to see what they do with their decision, and I wouldn't be surprised if we find something out today or tomorrow from the SEC, but big news yesterday from the ACC and what their football season is going to look like.
Here's the thing, though, Bunk, and I could see this totally happening because, you know, you have the natural rivals that we talked about earlier, you know, the Georgia Tech, Florida State, Clemson, South Carolina, Kentucky, Louisville. Now what happens with the other 10 teams if they have a situation like the ACC does where they allow for a knockout? Like, I could totally see Alabama kind of fudging this and playing, you know, some smaller school, or, you know, Louisiana, or maybe like UL Lafayette, maybe playing LSU or something like that. Like, that's so it wouldn't necessarily be the same kind of thing. And I feel like those other four schools – And again, there's no rule saying that those games have to happen as scheduled. But the fact of the matter is that there's more pressure for South Carolina to play Clemson, Florida to play Florida State, Georgia to play Georgia Tech, than there is for Alabama to really schedule anybody of consequence.
No doubt about it. And that's one of the brilliant things about what the ACC did yesterday, about what Commissioner John Swofford did yesterday, was they threw the ball right into the SEC's court and said, all right, if these games aren't going to get played, our fans aren't blaming us for it. The Georgia Tech fans can't be mad at me. It's going to be the SEC that cancels those rivalry games, not the ACC. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't think the SEC wants that on their hands either. So hopefully they're able to come to an agreement. I mean, look, you schedule a non-conference game in your state. Wake Forest was supposed to play Appalachian State anyway. Play Appalachian State. There's your in-state game. They can find those in-state games to play. Not every one of them, you're right, Will, is going to be a great marquee rivalry game like the ones that we discuss. But in order for those rivalry games to happen, those other schools will have to come up with something to do as well, and I hope that they do. And the big picture outcome, though, is the ACC laid down the gauntlet, and it looks like they're moving forward with plans to play this fall. There was also some mention of safety protocol in their plan as well, and as it looks like right now, at least the minimum requirement is going to be that schools test players once a week. It looks like that will be on Wednesday, and I guess it'll be up to the individual institutions to test more if they want to or if they can, if they have the resources to test more. I'm hopeful that that works. I'm hopeful that testing once a week on Wednesday is enough to keep these guys safe. I am skeptical, I'll be honest, about that, but I hope it does. I hope it works. I hope it means they can play football all fall.
It's a cost thing, I think, too, but I also feel like, you know, you can't put a price on safety. Like, that's the part of it that I think you have to really look at here from that perspective, because there's just not any way that you can do this that is cutting corners. I mean, we saw what's happened with Major League Baseball. I hate to impugn Rob Manfred for the 5,000th time this week, but that's what happens. That's what happens when you cut corners.
Yeah, it is.
What happens when you cut corners?
And we know that the NFL, for them to do what they're doing, their safety protocol, which is daily testing, at least for the first couple of weeks, is going to cost them about $75 million. And so that's for 32 teams. It is. It's expensive to test every single day. But the flip side is you don't, and, you know, kids get sick, something bad happens, and then people say, oh, you weren't willing to spend the money to be safe, and here we are. So, again, you know, hopefully all the safety protocols that they've set in place are enough to keep this season going. My biggest worry, or the sport that I'm least confident in, is college football, just because of all of the variables, the amount of players, campus life in and of itself, knowing what I was like when I was 20. yeah, it's gonna be a challenge, but hopefully they can do it. All right, let's get back into some of what Matt Ryan had to say yesterday. He was on Pro Football Talk. Here he is talking about the Falcons safety protocol and how they're well equipped to handle things.
Yeah, it's definitely different. We're lucky, you know, that we've got a lot of space and you know, a massive setup for us to be able to kind of space out and make sure that we are kind of up to code on all of the protocols. We have these kind of townhomes that we stay in during training camp that are built right behind our facility, which we're able to use as our locker room right now. We each have our own individual bathroom and bed and changing area and all that kind of stuff with doors. So we're uniquely, you know, built to kind of handle this.
No doubt. The Falcons and what they have up there at Flowery Branch, if you've never been there before, which many people probably haven't, is beautiful. I mean, it's state of the art. And for them to have those living quarters as well, which are now functioning as a locker room, really makes it seem like the Falcons, and hopefully other teams too, but the Falcons are really in good shape to try to handle this thing and keep people safe while they're working their way into trying to play in an NFL season. It is pretty nice to have like a full condo for players to be able to do this. And not every team has that, obviously.
Say what you want about the on-field results. I know that people will scoff at that, but if you think about the organizational detail that goes on behind the scenes with what Arthur Blank and the Falcons do organizationally, I feel like if there's anybody you want to trust with how to make it through this pandemic safely, it's them because of the infrastructure that they've built behind the scenes.
Yeah, and the NFL is not going to exist in a bubble, but the Falcons themselves, because of their setup, kind of have close to a bubble, which has worked in other sports, which is why the NBA is back tonight. Here's Adam Silver speaking about his league.
It's health and safety first. I mean, that's always been our guidepost going into this. We've worked very closely with the Players Association and all the teams on this. One thing we've always pointed out, it's about relative safety at this point. When you look at the high case rates, not just in Florida, but around the country, we also had significant numbers of players who tested positive between the time we shut down our season and when we restarted in early July. So we jokingly have said, but maybe it's not so funny, that the safest place in the world may be on this campus at Disney right now. But if it were to turn out to not be the case, we certainly would stop.
Yeah, he's right. They've done it. I mean, they've created themselves a medically secure bubble in order to play NBA basketball. But I also like that he's been realistic about this thing the whole time. I think the NBA has probably handled their return and this whole pandemic better than any other league. He said if it gets compromised, they'll shut it down. Like, if that's what happens, they're not going to play basketball because at the end of the day, it is just basketball.
Look at the test results the last couple of weeks. They've been pretty spotless.
They have, and hopefully that continues. Hopefully they get to finish the season out, and they're back tonight. Lakers and Clippers, second game. Pelicans and Jazz, first game. We'll come back and get back into what the Braves did last night. They play again tonight as well. Let you hear some post-game audio from some of the guys. Don't go anywhere. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. 20 minutes away from the AMA to close things out. Ask me anything, any question, any topic, but not just me. No, all four of us. Willie P., who's in for Randy, Ryan Gebhardt, Wendy Adams, we'll all be together for the AMA segment, so feel free to ask anybody any question. And it's Will's last AMA of the week. My assumption is Will will be back in the coming weeks with paternity leave and all. But Randy's going to be back tomorrow, so ask Will whatever you want. He's contractually obligated to answer it. anything you ask. Remember, Will, we were talking, because this has been a really big story this week with Lou Williams and the Magic City Wings, and I know you had the Magic City Wings, and Jason Longshore had the Magic City Wings. I had them back in the day when I went. A lot of people have had them. Wondering whether or not all of this publicity had done anything to their business. Well, there was a story yesterday that they were so flooded with orders that, and dang it, I don't remember. I don't know if you saw the story. Or not. It's either that their website crashed because of traffic.
No, I don't. Their website was down.
Yeah, their website was down because they had so much traffic. And they were doing so much business that the wait, if you ordered like Grubhub or DoorDash or whatever, could be up to 3 hours. Like that's how much business Magic City was doing with their wings.
So on Monday, I ordered them around 5:30, and I didn't get them until around the start of the Braves game, which was 6:40. So I waited about an hour and 10 minutes. And if you know anything about the geography of the city, you know, I live in Midtown, not exactly that far away. And it was after rush hour. So it was, and you could see when you order on like DoorDash or Grubhub, you could see like the tracker of like where your Dasher is. And then when your Dasher is waiting on the order, he was waiting there a real long time. And I almost texted him being like, are you staying for a dance or like what, you know, like what's going on?
Isn't it frustrating when you're starving and you're following your, or maybe you're waiting for an Uber or something like that following the driver they make a wrong turn and it's
you
like,
criticize them so much.
Why would you have done that? Like, why would you, that decision that you just made is going to cost you an extra 5 minutes. And these are the most first world problems you can possibly have.
Right.
But the person that's hand delivering you your food is going to make you wait 5 more minutes. I realize what a jerk I sound like complaining about it, but
there's also Amazon has this, and I think UPS has this now, where you can track the delivery truck.
Yeah.
And that becomes even more frustrating because you don't even, like, there's no formula. There's no rhyme or reason. It's like, they're in your area and then you're 7 blocks away. And it's like, what's this?
Just ask Wendy about FedEx when they'll take the package that's 2 miles from her house and take it 50 miles from her house at another location in Georgia. So she has to wait three more days before the package shows up.
And then she ends up going and getting a TV anyway.
Yeah, then she just goes and buys one without their help and cancels the order. All right, Atlanta United's manager, by the way, new manager, interim manager Stephen Glass, speaking with the media right now. We'll have some audio from that tomorrow. He's also going to join Dukes and Bell later in the afternoon. So if you're looking to hear from Atlanta United's interim boss, he's going to be with Dukes and Bell at 2:40, just over an hour from now. So be tuned in for that. Now, and the go ahead.
The one thing I did want to add that I think comes out of it is that Darren Eales made very, very clear that this is an interim position for Stephen Glass, and they really want to return him back to Atlanta United too. So it's not a situation where, like, if he does well, he can have that permanent job. They intend to hire a permanent full-time manager after this
little
period.
Yeah, and that's really important to make clear at the beginning, because if you don't, and you don't want him to be your manager, and you don't make that clear, this is kind of a situation that I think Alex Anthopoulos got into with Brian Snitker, is... If they do well and the players like them and you didn't make it clear that it was just an interim situation, they can kind of force your hand. And if they can continue to do well, then, you know, you end up with them in that situation for a while. So good.
But we've also seen that work.
Sometimes it does.
Sometimes it works.
Yeah. I mean, that's a similar situation in Seattle with the Sounders, with Brian Schmetzer, when they got rid of Siggy Schmidt. Schmetzer was going to be the interim, did well, won the MLS Cup, and he's still the manager today, for better or for worse. So that has certainly happened before. So not surprising that Darren Eales was very clear in his communication. That's something that he's really, really good at. But it's also good that they got ahead of that one and made that clear. All right, so big day yesterday for the Braves. They get the win. We'll get to some of the details of the game in just a minute. But the big news was the opt back in. I didn't know that that was a thing. I don't think many of us did, but Nick Markakis here says, well, he wanted to be back with the squad.
You know, those guys are out there taking risks every day, just like the rest of baseball. And, you know, deep down, it just didn't sit well with me. And, you know, here I am now.
Here he is. We talked to Joe Patrick in the 11 o'clock hour today. Normally we speak with Joe now, but he's at the Stephen Glass press conference. And he said, don't be surprised if it takes Markakis a week or so to kind of get back into the groove. And also, the Braves have to find a spot for him. I mean, they got a 30-man roster, so there's space. But in terms of desperate needs the Braves have right now, another outfielder isn't real. And I understand not everybody's tearing the cover off the baseball in the outfield right now. But if Nick Markakis was a starting pitcher, that would really be something. That would really be helpful for what the Braves have right now. Look, I'm glad Markakis is back. You know, support the decision that he made in the first place. Support the decision that he made here. As long as the guys are happy to have him, which you have to think that they are, I just don't know where he fits in right now. I don't know how he helps the Braves that much right now.
Yeah, it's far from the greatest need right now that the Braves have. They need a number four starter. They probably also wouldn't mind having some more solid ground at the number three and number five starters while they're at it. But I do think it does give Brian Snitker options. And you need that bat off the bench, or possibly somebody who can play the DH, or just an extra outfielder. You mentioned the fact that the outfielders aren't exactly hitting well. I think, you know, Ronnie Acuna, even though he got on base three times, still hitting under 200. Mm-hmm. Same thing for Ander Inciarte, and also Adam Duvall also hitting under 200. So it's not exactly something where that's a position of great power right now. The only guy who's really hitting in the outfield is Marcell Ozuna, and he's probably the second best hitter on the team right now to Dansby Swanson. I just look at this and I say, you know, maybe this does more outside of the stat line than it does on the stat line. But I do think that having him back certainly can give a little bit of a jolt. And I also feel like, you know, and I don't necessarily think that had an impact in the game tonight, but I do think that his presence in the clubhouse will have an impact. Because we talked a lot about, you know, whether or not Major League Baseball players are going to, quote, police themselves when it comes to the COVID-19 practices and protocols. And we're already seeing the impacts of what happens when a team steps out of those protocols. But just having another guy in there who's a veteran voice, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so, too. I agree with everything that you're saying. I also think that at some point they're going to need him, you know.
True.
Right now, the depth at that spot isn't an issue, but – you know, just looking
it
around baseball and knowing that in seasons, guys get banged up. The Braves have had issues in the outfield with guys getting banged up the last couple of years. at some point having that extra body and it being a veteran who has a great relationship in that locker room is going to be an important thing. And again, I'm just happy that he made the decision that he made. Now, the other story from last night beyond the Braves winning was Mike Soroka with another solid start. He did come out of the game early, but we feel good about Soroka. We feel good about Fried going tonight. What we don't know about is the remaining three spots in the rotation. Here is Mike Soroka talking about that.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, it's what I did, right? Yeah. It's something that you got to understand. And a lot of people, obviously, I looked at my 2018 year and I'd gotten hurt there only after five starts. But in those five starts, the amount that I learned to be able to take to the field in 2019 and hit the ground running was huge. It's kind of a tough thing to break in with a really good team because you're expecting wins every night. And, you know, you need to find those wins or else you're going to look somewhere else.
Sorry, Mike Soroka. I got excited. and hopefully he's right. Hopefully Kyle Wright and Sean Newcomb are able to take these learning experiences, speed up the learning process, and be contributing starting pitchers to this rotation as quickly as possible. When we had Joe on, you asked a great question, Will. We know Fried goes tonight. We know Newcomb goes tomorrow. What happens on Saturday?
Who's the starter
on Saturday? I mean, Chacin, I suppose. I mean, throw him out there, but we thought it would be Folty. Folty's not on the team anymore. Pretty wild first week for the Braves.
Yeah, you'll get an idea, I think, by who is used tonight, whether or not that is possibly part of whatever the plan is on Saturday. It could just be a bullpen free-for-all. Josh Tomlin's obviously an option as well. He threw well last time he was out there in the game that Kyle Wright started. But again, it's kind of a mystery and something that Braves really need to get a hold of.
I reached out to a couple people that have covered Felix for a very long time as well and know him well. One of them actually had talked to him recently just about the opt back in. Unlikely. Yeah. Unlikely was the word that I got.
I'm sorry for you.
From people that know Felix. Yeah, I know. Hey, people are opting back in. Maybe Felix will too. Nah, probably not. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into an AMA. Any question, any topic, send them in. We don't have a lot. I'm begging you, please. AMA questions. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We're queuing up your questions with the Middays AMA.
Ask me anything.
Glad you asked. On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Brought to you by Right From The Heart and rightfromtheheart.org. And again, ask and you shall receive. All you got to do is beg. And the Midday Show listeners, come a-calling, as always. Wendy says we got some good text questions, so we'll get there in just a minute. You can ask questions to me, to Willie P., who is in for Randy this is the final segment. Randy will be back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. To Brian and to Wendy as well. I also have, like, probably my favorite takeaway of the day ever, maybe. Maybe the weirdest tweet I've ever received from a listener. I will read to you in about 10 minutes from right now, but I love it.
Interesting.
We'll start here. AMA. What's your go-to dance song? What is a song that when it comes on, you cannot help but get into it? The music takes you over.
I like Living on a Prayer. I love dancing to that song.
But the hard, and I'm with you. When that song comes on, the whiteness, I mean, it's in there and it just takes over and you can't help it.
Yeah.
Same thing with Don't Stop Believing, Wagon Wheel. Like there's something in our whatever, insides that we can't help. But how do you dance to that? Like, how do you dance to Living on a Prayer besides just grabbing your friends around the shoulders and jumping?
I think it's more of like a karaoke type thing. Like you'll turn it up and scream at the top of your lungs type thing. And you can dance.
Yeah, like
to it
everybody's
as well.
Kind of huddled around lip syncing, right? Yeah. Like that's, or actually singing and doing a terrible job of it. But I'm with you. Like, there are certain songs that come on in crowds when drinking has taken place and you go nuts. I want to dance with somebody by Whitney Houston. I can't help it. Like, I just, doesn't matter where we are, doesn't matter what's going on, I'm going to dance.
Here's one that's, I would say, kind of almost a guilty pleasure, but Cher, If You Believe in Life After Love.
But again, like, that's, I have a hard time. I don't know how to dance to that kind of song.
You can dance
like
to that song. It's got a beat.
Okay. I gotcha. The one that I could be in a library, and if it came on, not only would I have to dance, but I would have to try to do the dance from the video, is Single Ladies by Beyonce. Like, I that song is too good. It consumes me. And when it comes on, like, everybody can do the hand thing where you twist your hand back and forth. But then there's the part where Beyonce does like the, I don't even know what you'd call it. She's doing like a step thing and then she tilts her head back. I've tried to do it so many times, drunkenly mostly, and I can't do it correctly, but I'm going to, every time I hear the song, I try.
If so. There's one dance move that I could ever wish myself to do, like a genie granted me three wishes, I'd want to do the Dirty Dancing lift with Patrick Swayze and Dirty Dancing. That's what I'd want.
Who do you want to be in that situation? You want Patrick
Swayze? I
want to
be Swayze.
I want to
be the lifter.
Okay.
I want to be Swayze.
Who do you
want to lift?
Lifting up? Who do you want to lift?
My girl. I'll say Julianne. I'll lift her.
Great. Perfect. Perfect. I want to be lifted in that situation and be carried around by Patrick Swayze. That's what I want. And I want Randy to do the lifting. That's what I want.
That's a clip right there. I want to be lifted. That's a clip right there.
AMA, best club in your bag when you're golfing. Best club in your bag.
Five iron.
Wow, that's a tough one.
The way that I'm built, 6'3", just the way the shaft is built, I hit that club better than I hit any club in my bag.
Okay. I don't know. Right, probably my driver right now. I've been really hitting my driver good, been putting me in, except for Saturday on the front nine. But on Tuesday evening when we played, I hit maybe not every fairway, but most of them. What is your favorite club? My favorite club is my sand wedge. I love my sand wedge. I'm pretty good with that one too. But there's nothing to me more satisfying in the game of golf than holing out on a chip in. It's just such a great feeling when you hole out on the chip, whether birdie, par, whatever. But it always
feels
good.
Very early on, like one of the first early hybrids, I stole a club from my dad. I say stole because he couldn't figure out how to hit it. It was like a driving iron kind of hybrid. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, he couldn't figure out how to hit it, but I could. And so he's like, take that club away from me, son. You can have it. And so I always use that.
That always sucks when you have a new club or your buddy has one and whoever's club it is can't hit it. And they let it, in your case, they let you hit it, or you have a friend and they let you hit it and you hit it better than them. It's almost like, all right, well, you got to give this to me now. Like, you can't. You're just wasting
this is
it.
Mine now.
I laced this thing 230 down the middle. You got to give this to me now. Like, I don't. This is what my game has been missing.
I own
what's
you.
The,
now.
What's the best club in your bag, Brian?
Recently, it's been the putter.
Yeah, Brian's a really good putter.
Yeah, I'll take the putter. I like the 7-iron the best, though. It just feels nice in the hand.
It's a buttery feel if you hit a 7-iron pure. What about you, Wendy? Best club in your bag?
Club sandwich.
There you go. I knew Wendy would have an answer for that. I didn't know what she was going to say. Best golf drink?
Bloody
give me
Mary.
A light beer. Give me a light
Bloody
beer.
Mary.
I'm happy on the golf course.
I love a morning Bloody Mary, like on a almost kind of crisp morning, like a 60, 70 degree morning Bloody Mary. Gotcha. Love that.
We're trying to get Wendy out with us next week, by the way, because Wendy doesn't golf. She's been to Topgolf a couple times. But by the way, Wendy, you have a really good swing. We've seen the video of Wendy's Topgolf swing. But she's going to come hang out with us.
I have a baseball swing, let's be honest.
That's okay. I mean, you got to swing your swing. Look at the PGA Tour right now. Some of the best golfers have really unique swings.
Bryson.
But you come hang out and drink some alcohol. And
yeah, I can have some Trulies.
Right around on the court or on the course. As a Grubhub delivery driver, this is from Val, by the way. They don't get paid for wait time. So when we're getting annoyed, they're also not getting money.
I wasn't trying to be mad about it.
If at the station Randy and Andy are Ronald and Ozzy, who is Andy's Dansby? Because we talked about this earlier. The love
Ryan.
That Ronald Acuna and Ozzy have for each other. I'll take that with Randy. I think we have that. Who's my Dansby? Probably Jarvis, I would say. Me and Jarvis worked together for a good long time and have a really strong friendship and relationship, so I would say that.
Fair.
Wendy said she had some good ones over there. Let's go to Wendy.
Yeah, we're gonna start here. Should Magic City start a food truck, and how should they set it up if they do?
It's a really good question. So the answer is yes.
And absolutely.
So this is something that I didn't realize didn't exist in other parts of the country. But in the Pacific Northwest, they have coffee stands that are run by women in bikinis.
Oh.
It's called bikini baristas. And they're very popular. Controversial, but very popular. If you had a food truck, and if Magic City had a food truck, And it was, you know, run by people in bikinis, women in bikinis, maybe employees of Magic City. That would probably be a really popular place for people to go get wings from.
I would say that's a very good idea. And I'm wondering, like I said before, would you get the full Magic City experience? That's the big question.
Well, you can't do that. That's how the bikini baristas have gotten in trouble.
Right.
Is people slip them a couple extra bucks and then, you get a peekaboo and then, yeah. That's against the law. You can't do that. Right. But bikinis are okay.
Peekaboo, that's funny.
Yeah.
Assuming everyone stays the same amount of time, who's drinking the most at the 92.9 The Game Christmas party?
Randy.
It's a toss-up between Randy and Mike Bell.
Who would win in that drinking contest?
It would be a clash of the Titans. Like, I honestly don't know. I mean, because neither one of them would give up. I mean, is anyone else even in the conversation? Like,
no.
In an attempt to drink one another under the table?
Maybe CCV.
CCV. But CCV eventually passes out, and that's how he ends up sleeping at your house.
Personal experience.
I've never seen Randy or Mike tap out. they're always the last one. I don't know, Brian. You've drank with both of them before. Who wins?
Oh man. Neither are going to sleep at all. You're going to wind up, there won't be a judge to see who wins. So no one will wind up winning and they'll both say that they won.
It's true. You'd have to take, because they're going to drink longer than you can pay attention to them drinking. Like you're going to have to go to bed.
Well, we can look at the tape. We can put a video camera in a room.
I would have to get, Randy's just bigger. Like he's just got more body mass. To sustain him and keep him going. I think. But I don't know, betting against Mike is a tough one when it comes to drinking. I'd love to see it. I don't know how much they'd be able to consume in that contest, but yeah, they'd be the last ones.
Oh yeah, last ride.
I don't know who would win.
What would be the best stadium to host the Super Bowl if they couldn't have fans? Because it's in Tampa this year.
Yeah. Marlins Park.
Marlins Park. God, I don't know.
Jerry World, big TV.
Yeah, Jerry World's cool, but the only problem is, and same thing with Mercedes-Benz, is they're so cavernous without fans inside of them. I'm trying to think of a smaller, intimate venue that would be cool. Have it over there at Grady Stadium. Have it over there in right by Piedmont Park.
Put it at Bobby Dodd.
It's intimate. The fact that there's no fans there wouldn't matter. That Bobby Dodd, great example. A cool old stadium that would make it very cool. All right, let's get the takeaways of the day.
As our show heads into the final stretch, it's time for the takeaway of the day.
So many achievements.
On Andy and Randy, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, takeaways of the day to wrap things up every single day before we hand off to Dukes and Bell. Again, Stephen Glass, the interim manager for Atlanta United, going to join Dukes and Bell at 2:40. Let's start with Wendy. What'd you learn today, Wendy?
Well, Andy, my takeaway comes from you. We're all hypocrites in some form or fashion.
I am all the time. What about you, Will?
I was surprised when you said you want to be lifted in the Jennifer Grey, Patrick Swayze scenario. Surprised.
Yeah, I think it would be fun. I would feel tall for once. My takeaway of the day comes from a listener named Khadijah, who says this. She's been rewatching Designing Women, and she realized that me and Jean Smart have a lot in common. Both from Seattle, both blonde, both long-winded, both the only member of their four-person group to not be Southern, and they have a show set in Atlanta. So I'm Gene Smart from Designing Women. Thank you, Khadijah. What about you, Brian?
That's awesome. Dansby and Ozzy share something called man love.
Yep.
Sad to see a bunch of Dunkin' Donuts closed today. Mm. Thanks for filling in this week, Will. Appreciate
thanks,
you filling
man.
In the last few
great
days.
Great work, Will.
Andy has tried to dance to the single lady dance on multiple occasions, which is, that's great.
There is video of that, by the way.
And when Living on a Prayer comes on, the whiteness takes over.
There's nothing you can do. You can try to suppress it, but it takes over. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. It'll be Happy Hour Friday, the return of Randy McMichael. And seriously, again, thanks, Will. Great work.
Thank you, guys.
A lot of fun this week. Have a safe Thursday afternoon. We will talk to you guys on Friday. See you later.
Boy, Camargo thought he had that. He got that one out.
Yeah, I'm
Seemed like it.
Watch out now!
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.